Page 1, President's Page, by Donna Pomerantz. A peaceful end to a Memorial Day holiday weekend has continued to keep me in reflection mode. I'm thinking about our spring conference and convention, along with all that led to and will follow it. First, a quick reminder in the hopes that many of you, your families and friends, will join me in signing up for the Mutt Strut on September 10. Call the CCB office or find the information about it on our webpage to learn how to register yourself or sponsor your friends or how to participate in other ways. We are looking to have a great time before and on the 10th. Come join the fun with all of us, our dogs, our canes, and whoever else we may involve. Our conference and convention theme was charting our course into the future while keeping our historic bearings. Now more than ever, we need to come together so that the heavy lifting won't fall on just a few. Times are getting harder, and we all need each other's support. I see us having to be creative, steadfast, and vigilant. We need to leave our comfort zone to advocate just to keep what we have fought hard battles to win, as well as to advance the needs of citizens with visual impairments. Page 2. The resolutions we pass at each convention are at the heart of our advocacy work. In looking at those on May 15th, the direction you've given CCB is clear and requires action on all our parts. See resolution summaries elsewhere in this issue. To request the full text of any resolution, contact the office. We will fight for a viable California Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, program for those who wish to attend a four-year college and have proven by maintaining a high-grade point average that right has been earned. It is not enough for a student's first 2 years of college to pay only the amount equal to the cost of a community college. Another resolution voices our concerns about proposed changes to streamline the process and lower costs in the purchase and procurement of assistive technology and training for DOR clients and state employees with visual impairments. We must continue to stand strong to move the powers that be forward in allowing us the right, just as everyone else has, to equal, independent, private, and complete access to voting, whether in the comfort of our own home or on election day at our polling place, as is mandated by our U.S. Constitution. Another resolution insists it is imperative for our safety that we have full access to all disaster preparedness programs and emergency alerts. Also, on the theme of education, we insist that our children, the leaders and advocates of tomorrow, receive quality education through accessible materials and textbooks in a timely manner. Other resolutions support more specific interests of our vendors and guide dog users. You have stated loud and clear that a strong California State Department of Rehabilitation, Blind Field Services, is a must for our continued success. You also state that we must do whatever it takes to advocate for no further budget cuts to programs impacting quality of life and survival for those of us who are blind and/or have other disabilities. At least one of the above items must interest you in some way. Commit to at least one and let's work to keep watch and advocate to keep what we've been working toward for some 75-plus years. Together, let's continue to make a difference. We must move forward. Page 3. Convention Report, Spring 2011, Part 1, by Sam Chen, Delegate, Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. Editor's Note, we have a special treat for the coverage of this past spring convention and conference. Both a delegate and alternate delegate from the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind have prepared their unique perspectives of their convention experience. You will find some repetition and a number of convention activities, including much of Sunday's business meeting, are not covered, but I think you'll find the two distinctive voices fascinating and insightful. Both gentlemen are naturalized citizens. CCB and the country are lucky to have them. We, 10 SVCB members, took the Capital Corridor Amtrak train from Diridon Station in San Jose to Sacramento on Wednesday around noontime. We were put in the lower level of the train, which is reserved for seniors and the disabled, and indeed many of us are qualified disabled seniors. Joyful conversation among members made the three-hour train ride pass in no time. Page 4. We soon checked into the DoubleTree Hotel, which seems to be one of the most complex hotels a blind person can ever imagine on this planet. The hotel features spiderweb-like hallways, which lead to all different directions. If one did not stay on the correct path, one could probably have ended up at a totally isolated destination. If that did happen, we might be a few members short. On many occasions during the convention, we had to form a long train with one hand holding on to another one's shoulder to follow the sighted guide to the common destination of hotel lobby or the meeting hall for general sessions. It was quite challenging. However, it was fun and memorable. Following Bernice and Roger's tradition in attending the state convention in Sacramento, a handful of us went to El Torito, a special Mexican restaurant across the street from the DoubleTree Hotel. Not to mention the special delicious Mexican cookery, we just loved the yummy dessert of deep-fried ice cream. Page 5. The first day of the convention, Thursday, May 12, which featured a few sessions including a technology discussion and the board meeting, also saw the annual Capitol Day, which is a CCB visit to the legislators in Sacramento, led by our legislative leader, Frank Welty. Around 30 CCB members congregated at the State Capitol building, where Frank Welty briefed the group on bills sponsored by CCB and other issues of our concerns. Bills sponsored by CCB include AB 390, which would make it a law to provide written notification to California state identification card holders of the expiration of their cards. AB 410 would require the state to provide a narrative descriptive of changes to their regulations so that members' screen readers could properly interpret such changes. At this time, changes are marked by italicized text or strike-through text, features not compatible with screen readers. Page 6. Other issues of CCB's concerns include AB 727, which would mandate by 2016 a 100% provision of healthy food in state vending machines operated by blind vendors and members of the Business Enterprise Program. Also of concern are negative budget impacts on SSI, Medicare, Medi-Cal recipients within our population. Using the name of Art Takahara, a close acquaintance of Assemblyman Jim Beal of District 24, I was able to secure an appointment with my Assemblyman, who promised to greet me in person at his office. I met Jim at the State Assembly Committee Room on the third floor in the State Building and had a friendly conversation for 15 minutes. I first thanked Beals for his kind efforts serving on the Human Service Committee and then further solicited his continuing support to the blind community. I also met my senator, Sam Blakesley's staff, at his office and had a 20-minute discussion on the above-described bills and issues. In addition, I delivered the list of legislative priorities at Assemblyman Brian Nestande, Assemblywoman Norma Torres, and Assemblyman Alan Mansour's offices. Page 7. An official announcement was made at the convention that Frank Welty, Governmental Affairs Director, has taken a position at the San Francisco Lighthouse and will be leaving as a CCB employee on May 15th. Upon Donna Pomerantz's request, Jeff Tom agreed to volunteer his time to fill Frank's position till the end of 2011. CCB's first Mutt Strut, a statewide fundraiser, will be held on September 10, 2011, in L.A. and Sacramento. All CCB members are encouraged to invite their friends and family members to participate. The cost is $25 for adults and $20 for kids under 16, which includes a T-shirt. Participants can choose the course of either 2K or 5K. All CCB members are urged to identify as many donors and sponsors as possible. The resolution on emergency preparedness, which I submitted, was voted to pass with revision. Joshua Mealy from Smith Kettlewell spoke on tactile graphics for BART routes and stations. Joshua illustrated the use of tactile maps and smart pens by people with blindness or low vision to interpret the 3D structure and the special layout of the Coliseum BART station through Braille labels and audio outputs. Audio information of different degrees on each plot can be accessed in layer. For example, first touch for name of the location, second touch for its positional relationship with neighboring plots, and third touch for a description of its function, and so on. Page 8. Through proper training of the use of such tactile maps, a blind traveler can find out the layout of streets around certain BART stations, bus stops around the station, stairways, escalators, elevators, entrances, exits, ticketing machines, fare gates and platforms, and most importantly, where train doors open. Anyone interested in the BART tactile graphics may contact the San Francisco Lighthouse for a demonstration and hands-on experience. Jeff Tom made the ACB report as follows. What we accomplished in 2010 includes the 21st Century Telecommunication and Video Accessibility Act, federal standards on quiet electric cars to assure pedestrian safety, both of which were signed into law. Legislation on talking prescription drug labeling was initiated. Discussions with major corporate representatives of Apple, Facebook, and Microsoft were held to make products more accessible to the blind community. Jeff also announced the forthcoming ACB's golden anniversary in July 2011 in Reno and encouraged members to attend. Page 9. A historian, Heather Levezo Downey, gave a talk on the history of Sacramento, a unique man-made landscape of raised streets and sidewalks. Tourists can still tour the underground site in Old Sacramento today. Being inspired by the gold rush starting in 1848, Sacramento City was founded in 1850 and became the state capital in 1854. Though severely damaged by a massive storm with torrential rain in 1861 and 1862, which flooded the city for months, residents in Sacramento believed that Mother Nature is manageable and decided to reroute the American River and to raise the streets and began to challenge the power of man versus force of nature. A blind geologist, Dr. Garrett Vermeij, distinguished professor of geology from UC Davis, gave a fabulous speech. He spoke about the evolution of this world. In order to become an outstanding scientist, one has to know how to ask the right and important questions, ask answerable questions, and know how to get answers. Losing sight at the age of 3, the speaker got interested in science from an early age, and he received professional training at Princeton University. Besides teaching activities at the university, he has worked in the field at museums and libraries. In order to keep up with worldwide discoveries, he usually reads 10 publications a week. He composes his research papers in Braille and finally types them up after numerous rewritings and revisions. Page 10. Speakers from Kaiser Permanente Group spoke about architectural access, accessibility of medical equipment, and accessibility of written materials through alternative formats for disabled people who subscribe to the Kaiser Group. Many CCB members like the audio prescription drug labels, which provide the name of the medicine, when to take it, dosage needed each time, and special attentions required in taking it. CCB members expressed interest in recycling those audio prescription drug labels. The speakers also touched upon the availability of a talking glucometer, assistive listening devices, and network interpreting services. The Deaf-Blind Committee decided to educate CCB members through the publication of articles in the BC and on the California Connection. explaining that we now provide the assistive listening devices, ALDs, to convention attendees, which will enable those deafblind members to better follow the dialogue and speech presented in large group sessions. The committee also discussed issues in modernizing the current CCB sound system for smaller or less attended sessions, such as committee meetings. A decision was made to include a session on deafblindness issues at an upcoming convention. An experienced hearing aid user advised new hearing aid users not to start wearing the hearing aid every day, which often leads to pain and frustration and eventually totally abandoning the hearing aid. A better practice is to start with wearing it only a few days in a week and not wearing it for the rest of the week. Doing so not only reduces the level of frustration, but also raises the awareness of the distinct difference between wearing and not wearing the hearing aid. The convention banquet was held on Saturday evening, where Dawn Wilcox was granted a special award of community service, which made all SVCB members so proud of her. A last-minute replacement, Joe Hamilton, provided a very spirited and amusing presentation to banquet attendees. Joe spurred continuing laughter and applause. Page 11. Convention Report, Spring 2011, Part 2 by David Hoffman, Alternate Delegate and Recording Secretary, SVCB. The CCB Spring Convention, held May 12 to 15 in Sacramento, was an extremely well-organized event and the obvious fruit of many hours of dedicated efforts by many people. All was guided by the great leadership of new CCB President Donna Pomerantz. In this attendee's view, the work done by Donna and all of her minions resulted in a series of days which made us think about our roots, gave us great hope for the future, and reminded us of all the challenges we have to meet head-on in order to grow at both the state and chapter level. Page 12. It will be impossible for me to review or comment on all that was presented, but I hope to provide a glimpse into what was experienced and where my very great enthusiasm for this group lies. In essence, we have a great deal to look forward to, but only if we continue to recognize the social, economic, and political challenges that face us. The weekend reminded me, among other things, that change begins with a word or an idea put into action and with thoughtful follow-up. Our experiences as blind and visually impaired citizens can only be better. One of the very great highlights of the weekend for me was the Capital Day, organized by outgoing CCB Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, Frank Welty. Although not an official part of the convention, it was attended by many of those also attending the convention and conference. Personally, as a relatively newly naturalized U.S. citizen, I was very much impressed and educated by this day of visiting the state's various senators and assembly persons. Our menu of issues were warmly received with both enthusiasm and promises of support. Participation in this day very much reminds one of the importance of one voice in a choir and leads one to feel like they can truly make a difference. At the same time, it is evident that our work will need dedication on more than just one day, and whatever readers can do to let their voices be heard will have a positive effect if only we keep talking. Page 13. The weekend saw many interesting and informative and even fun seminars and sessions. Here are some of my highlights, although I encourage everyone to access the sessions that were broadcast on ACB Radio to relive the thoughtful speakers and guests. The very dedicated Resolutions Committee met a number of times during the convention, including many late-night hours, to deftly put together about a dozen resolutions, including such topics as opposing the lighting industry's plan to completely cease production and sale of incandescent light bulbs to be replaced by energy-efficient fluorescent bulbs, which poses a serious issue for low-vision people. Page 14. accessible voting machines and local elections, and introducing more current and up-to-date voting technologies to allow more options to blind and low-vision voters. Opposition and monitoring of reduction of state funds in state programs on transportation, education, and social services. Procurement of Braille textbooks in a timely manner for elementary school kids. One other resolution that I'm particularly proud to have played a very small part in bringing to fruition concerns disaster preparedness and the concept of making sure that blind and visually impaired residents and their service animals are treated in the same fair manner as other residents. One of our chapter members, Sam Chen, brought this proposed resolution to our chapter meeting, and although not initially met with unanimous support, with the great help of Rob Turner and Roger Peterson, the wording was cleaned up and passed easily in front of the members on the final day of the convention. This goes to show that every idea developed at each and every chapter needs perhaps just a few champions and can make a statewide difference. Way to go, Sam and team. Mike Marlin, Director, California Braille and Talking Book Library, Sacramento, spoke at the Braille Revival League and gave everyone a nice summary of what the library continues to do to serve both audio and Braille readers. It is very encouraging for me to know that as I continue to learn Braille, there is definite support out there to support and supply a source of Braille material. There were two representatives from the state library in attendance, and I overheard at least three convention-goers say that it was great to actually meet their own personal suppliers of books that have entertained them for some time. Page 15. The CLUA, California Library Users of America, also met and included a very touching discussion of talking book reader Terry Hayes Sales. Although I have only relatively recently lost my vision, the kind words and enthusiasm for her work make me really look forward to having her book sent to me. I guess I have the advantage of looking forward to many hours of entertainment. As with every convention, there was a plethora of opportunities to kick back and share a meal with friends old and new, have a drink or two, and honor some in our community. And, of course, share some fond or outrageous moments, such as the Friday night President's Dinner. This dinner was hosted by Deborah Thompson, President of the Capital Chapter of Sacramento. At this dinner, members were encouraged to share some of their most courageous and amusing experiences as a blind youth or as an adult behaving as though they were still kids. Recently, I was reminded that courage is often represented in our society as the heroic soldier returning from battle with some terrible physical or psychological wounds, or the young child who overcomes all odds to survive a terrible illness. This evening of the convention, for me, demonstrated what a friend recently reminded me of, that with all the obstacles that we as visually impaired persons face, we do not get the badge of courage pinned to our lapels often enough. It takes courage to try to educate the sighted world on a daily basis how to deal with us and not be afraid of us. Page 16. This particular evening of stories shared, many of which were rather amusing, others quite inspiring, was a fresh reminder that we should all really be proud of what it takes to just attend a convention such as this, or take action in your own private and little space in this world to just be a part of it, no more or less than the hero soldier or surviving child. Another CCB-sponsored event that came up a number of times during the weekend was the upcoming fundraiser, the Mutt Strut, to be held on September 10 in both Sacramento and Los Angeles areas. This is the first fundraising of this size undertaken by our organization, and if the enthusiasm and incredible hard work by all those involved is any indication, it will be a barking success. I encourage you to check out the details on the CCB website and get involved in any way you can, even if it is to raise a little money, walk or run yourself, or just pass the word on to friends and family. The event will feature a 2K and a 5K run or walk and will welcome dogs of all kinds. Guide dogs are welcome. Service animals or pet dogs. The event will feature many sponsors that the organizers are gathering as we speak. So if your company or organization can sponsor a team, they will get some really great publicity. Ken Metz leads this group of dedicated organizers, and although Ken was not able to attend the convention, his team represented very well and could not help but get me very much looking forward to participating. Please do not bow wow out of this one. Page 17. Very, very, very early on Saturday, a small group of dedicated convention attendees showed up for a membership breakfast hosted by board member Dave Jackson. DJ, as he is known, led the group in a brainstorming session of how chapters can support other chapters in their area on growing membership, sharing in events, fundraising, and, as the convention theme suggested, assuring the continued health of each and every chapter. I was disturbed to notice during other sessions and the credential sessions where chapters in attendance were officially counted for voting purposes that many chapters could not attend due to financial reasons or just lack of members, in some cases simply chapters closing down. One of the themes that came up during this discussion, between the eggs and orange juice, was the need for stronger chapters to support chapters that are struggling with membership, finances, or just ideas to keep winning participation from becoming an epidemic. Many great ideas came out of this session, and I hope they are shared with everyone through CCB or its website. Page 18. At 7 p.m. on Saturday, most of us gathered for the banquet hosted by Rob Turner, Chair, CCB Credentials Committee. Rob did an excellent job keeping the evening lively, despite some unexpected changes in the schedule. Awards were given to very worthy recipients, and raffle prizes were awarded. Once again, I did not win anything, but the winners were very excited. And despite being one number off for the 50-50 raffle, I will be back next time with my tickets, because we do not just give up that easily. There were so many inspiring award winners that night, including some very bright students, and my personal favorite, our chapter's member, Dawn Wilcox, who won a very well-deserved award for many years of dedicated service as a registered nurse, community contributor, and support through her work at the Vista Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired Health Library in Palo Alto. Rumor has it that Dawn shed a tear or two, not sure if it was for the award or for not winning the balloon ride. Clearly the weekend was a great ride for many, and with continuing hard work, advocacy, kinship, and support of our great CCB staff in Sacramento, thanks Ed and Lily, our future looks very bright. Page 19. John Linville, Inventor of the Opticon, Dies at 91, by Andrew Myers. Editor's note, the following article is excerpted and edited by permission from the Stanford Report, March 10, 2011. The author, Andrew Myers, is Associate Director of Communications at the School of Engineering. A pioneer of Silicon Valley, John Linville transistorized the Stanford Electrical Engineering curriculum and helped shape an industry that shaped the world. Chuck Painter. John Linville invented the optical-to-tactile converter, or opticon, as a means to allow his blind daughter Candy to read ordinary print. John Linville, Professor Emeritus of Electrical Engineering at Stanford and inventor of the Opticon reading device for the blind, has died. He was 91. Linville was a revered figure at Stanford as much for his self-effacing and unpretentious style as for his engineering foresight and his commitment to the entrepreneurial spirit. He chaired the Department of Electrical Engineering from 1964 to 1980 and was a seminal figure in the School of Engineering during the 1960s and 70s heyday that fed well-trained electrical engineers to an eager and growing Silicon Valley. Page 20. Born and raised in Missouri, Linville received a bachelor's degree in mathematics from William Jewell College in 1941 before enrolling at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he earned his bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in electrical engineering. After 2 years as an assistant professor at MIT, Linville joined Bell Labs, doing research on transistor circuit design problems. Linville was content at Bell Labs, but in 1954, Stanford engineering dean Fred Terman came calling. Terman had in hand an unexpected gift from Sid Gilfillan, who expressed an interest in bringing someone to Stanford to build a program in the application of transistors. Terman's search led him to Linville, who had earned a reputation as a proven and popular teacher while at MIT and an outstanding scholar in research in transistor circuits. In 1955, Linville became Stanford's first appointment in a discipline that helped to shape an industry that in turn shaped the world. While the trajectory of Stanford's program began with transistor circuit design, it took a dramatic turn in 1956 with the arrival of William Shockley in Palo Alto, the heart of what is now Silicon Valley. Page 21, a shrewd judge of talent. During Linville's career in the Department of Electrical Engineering, he repeatedly exhibited an intuitive understanding of transformative moments in research. He was able to see a breakthrough, to imagine its potential importance, and to set in motion the wheels to make sure that Stanford led always. He was a shrewd judge of his own talents and strengths, and an even shrewder judge of talent in others. He wanted to join Stanford to realize the rare opportunity being presented to those with an entrepreneurial bent. Ellipsis. Invented device to help blind people read. Linville reveled in his role of mentor. He was generally interested in the success of others, especially entrepreneurial success. Linville applied his engineering creativity and his entrepreneurial spirit to help his daughter, Candy, who became blind in infancy. Linville sought a way to help her to directly read printed materials without translation into Braille. His solution, using integrated circuits developed in the labs and with help of colleagues at Stanford and the Stanford Research Institute, was the Opticon, optical-to-tactile converter. The Opticon was a portable device with a small handheld camera that could be moved across any type of printed material to generate images on a fingertip-sized tactile display that were then felt and interpreted by a blind reader. Page 22. Linville received a patent for the Opticon in 1966. He was a co-founder in 1970 of Telesensory Systems, Inc., a company established to manufacture and disseminate the Opticon worldwide. The Opticon was to become one of the most important examples of how technology could be applied to the development of assistive devices for people with disabilities. In 1971, Industrial Research, Inc. named the Opticon one of the 100 most significant products of the year. Helped greatly by her father's invention, Candy attended Stanford and went on to earn her doctorate in clinical psychology. The late 1970s demanded a new era of innovation in Stanford's electrical engineering curriculum. The advent of the microprocessor at Intel introduced electronic hardware controlled by software programs integrated in the system. Linville and colleagues foresaw that optimum system design would soon require the creation of hardware and software designed for specific applications, computer graphics, for example, and that groundbreaking research would require an effective partnership between electrical engineering and computer science. The result was Stanford Center for Integrated Systems, CIS. Page 23. Linville and CIS colleagues anticipated as well that with the proper openness, integrated systems research would profit by engaging with forward-looking electronics companies. As co-director of CIS, Linville conceived and implemented a visitors program in CIS to bring industry professionals to Stanford, and the fellow/mentor/advisor FMA program that placed Stanford doctoral candidates in industry for a portion of their education. More than 30 years later, CIS has become the model for university-corporate partnerships. In 2007, at a special celebration surrounded by his family, Linville was surprised by a group of former students, colleagues, and friends who had endowed the Professor John G. Linville Fellowship Fund, which supports the education of an outstanding graduate student in electrical engineering. Many of those contributors had flown in from across the country to toast their friend and mentor. Page 24. In addition to serving as chair of the Department of Electrical Engineering, Linville was associate dean of the School of Engineering from 1972 to 1980 and was the Canon USA Professor of Electrical Engineering from its endowment in 1989 until his retirement at the end of 1990. As a professor emeritus, Linville continued to follow his passions, focusing research on integrated systems. Linville was named a fellow of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers in 1960 and was elected to the National Academy of Engineering in 1971 and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences in 1974. He received the IEEE Education Medal in 1976 and the John Scott Award in 1980 for his work on the Opticon. Linville was honored with the American Electronics Association's Medal of Achievement in 1983 for his significant contributions to the advancement of electronics. He was recipient of the Louis Braille Prize, 1984, from the Deutscher Blindenverband for the invention of the Opticon. John Grimes Linville was born on August 8, 1919, in Kansas City, Missouri. His twin brother, William, also a Stanford professor, died in 1980. He is survived by his wife, Marjorie Linville of Palo Alto, a son, Greg, wife, Betty of Belmont, California, a daughter, Candy Berg, husband, Chris of Portola Valley, California, two granddaughters, Angela and Alyssa Linville, and a great-grandson, Sato Ramsaran. A service celebrating Linville's life will be held at the Stanford Faculty Club on May 23 from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. The family asks that donations in memory of John G. Linville be made to the LMSARCOMA Direct Research Foundation in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the website lmsdr.org. Page 25. Summary of Board Minutes by Gabe Griffith. Following are summaries of the October 28, 2010 CCB pre-convention board minutes, December 15 conference call minutes, and the January 27, 2011 conference call minutes. These are the most recent minutes that the board has approved. Copies of all these full minutes can be obtained by contacting the CCB office. October 28 pre-convention board meeting. All members of the board were present. Two of these were by phone. There were motions made and passed to accept the May 6, 2010, June 29, 2010, and September 20, 2010 minutes. All of these passed unanimously. It was moved and seconded to move $30 from general checking to the Sylvia Middleman Scholarship account. The motion passed. Ed Branch read a written publications committee report, as well as a draft of a certification of appreciation the publications committee has drafted. Bernice Kandarian then discussed the survey that was sent out, requesting what formats people prefer for the Blind Californian and some general results. She also gave information on how many people subscribed to the CCB email lists. Page 26. There was then a discussion regarding possible future formats and feasibility of a format compatible with the NLS players. A motion was made and seconded to discontinue the floppy disk version of the BC and replace it with a data CD. This motion failed. It was moved that the Publications Committee be requested to bring before the CCB Board at the Fall 2011 Convention a plan to provide the BC in a format readable by the NLS digital players. The motion passed on a voice vote. Donna Pomerantz talked about how the web administration has now been broken up into five sections. These include email lists, ccbnet.org, alias email addresses, Facebook, the website, and data backup. Page 27. It was moved and seconded to ratify a phone and email poll that had been taken among board members to grant a charter to the Coachella Valley chapter and cede them $500 from CCB. The motion passed unanimously. It was moved and seconded to accept a two-year contract that had been submitted by the L.A. Crown Plaza. Jerry seconded. The motion carried on a roll call vote. Dan Kaiser discussed plans for a possible dog-a-thon as a potential CCB fundraiser. He was asked to develop a budget for holding a dog-a-thon in Southern California and bring it to the board at the next board meeting. There was a motion made and seconded to enter into a contract with Right Ways for vehicle donations. This motion failed on a roll call vote. December 15, 2010, CCB Board Conference Call. This meeting was attended by all but one member of the board. It was moved and seconded to accept the October 28 pre-convention board meeting minutes. The motion passed unanimously. It was moved and seconded to accept the fundraising recommendation that the spring sweepstakes be held for the BC. The motion passed. Gabe Griffith then read several corporate resolutions that dealt with financial institutions and changing names of the new president and treasurer on these accounts. It was moved and seconded to adopt these board resolutions. The motion passed. Page 28, the board then entered executive session to discuss personnel matters. It was moved and seconded to continue working with Conference Direct and to begin seeking bids for the spring and fall 2013 conventions. The motion passed. The board then decided to approve the proposed budget and begin moving forward with plans for a dog-a-thon to be held simultaneously in L.A. and Sacramento. The board also approved the incoming and outgoing presidents and treasurers to expend whatever funds were necessary, up to a $1,000 limit, between this and the next board meeting. This was the last board meeting for several board members, including Kathy Skivers as outgoing immediate past president, Chris Gray as outgoing treasurer, and Ken Metz as an outgoing board member. The meeting ended with thank you words from these outgoing members. January 27, CCB Board Conference Call. All board members were present. Donna Pomerantz gave some opening remarks as CCB president. She outlined her vision of what CCB can do and how it can accomplish its goals. Page 29. The December 15, 2010 CCB Board Conference Call minutes were approved with one modification. There were several abstentions from new board members who had not been present at that meeting. The board then entered executive session to discuss an offer by the Newell Perry trustees to help defray some of the cost of CCB employees' salaries in 2011. Peter Pardini then discussed some audit matters. There were some funds that the board voted to change designations on per recommendations from the auditors. It was then decided to accept the bid from the same auditors to perform the 2010 audit. Gabe Griffith read the proposed board resolution, purchasing of equipment for blind and low-vision clients of the Department of Rehabilitation and state employees. This resolution deals with the proposed change in the way the Department of General Services and the Department of Rehabilitation purchase adaptive equipment for employees or clients of rehab in the state of California. The board adopted this resolution. It was moved and seconded that CCB be one of the affiliates that seeks to participate in the pilot rollout of a new ACB membership database, and that we make a one-time donation of $250 to help defray the cost of this participation, the motion passed. The board decided to have a table at the CTE-BVI conference in March. Page 30, CCB Hearing and Visual Impairment Committee, What It's Up To, by Mike Keithley. In this article, I want to tell you about CCB's newly constituted CCB Hearing and Visual Impairment Committee, what it's doing now, future plans, and how it serves you. The committee was formed during the fall 2010 conference and convention and accepted by the CCB board as a standing committee last January. The meeting at the 2011 spring convention was well attended, with over 15 people present. David Hanlon is committee chair. You can mail him at d_hanlon@san.rr.com. This committee wants to serve the growing population of CCB members who are either hearing impaired or deafblind, a group that is expected to increase substantially as baby boomers become senior citizens. It is both a support group to help people deal with hearing loss and an advocacy team to represent them to the CCB board. We hope to launch an educational program to show that hearing loss can be lived with and develop a structure of equipment to make all CCB convention activities accessible, from general sessions to committee business and program meetings. Page 31. The term hearing impairment denotes a spectrum of conditions from hard of hearing, some usable hearing, to deafness, no hearing at all. Vision problems occur in both groups, so the term deaf-blind is sometimes used, but usually refers to visually impaired people who are deaf. Since approaches to accommodating hearing impaired and deaf-blind people differ greatly, and each require lots of money, the committee decided to first address the needs of those who have some hearing, as this population is larger and probably costs less to help. At this time, we are investigating funding sources for assistive listening devices, ALD, which will be used at conventions. The goal is to soon have 16 ALD receivers and transmitters that will cover all convention activities. At this time, only general sessions have ALD support, and there are only 5 receivers, so you can see that we have a way to go. Page 32. But we've started. We've done research into equipment we need and where to get it. We need roughly $7,600, and we decided to raise funds in a 2-step process so that FM transmitter and 8-channel receiver sets can soon be purchased. When everything is ready, 16 people will be accommodated, and it won't cost much for additional receivers. The heart of the system is an 8-channel receiver, so that each specific convention activity is assigned a channel. You just switch, for example, to channel 1 for general sessions and the banquet, or 7 for the publications committee business meeting. This assumes you're in the appropriate room. The CCB Hearing and Visual Impairment Committee is also a support group for anyone who has a hearing impairment. We don't have an email list yet, but aspects of hearing loss are discussed on ACB's SASI, Sound and Sight Impaired, email list. We think of ourselves as a local version of SASI. You can subscribe to SASI by sending a blank email message to sasi-subscribe@acb.org. Dealing with hearing loss is similar to handling vision problems, in that you first need to consider that there is a problem which must be dealt with. The CCB Hearing and Visual Impairment Committee is here to help. Prominent CCB members Roger Peterson, David Jackson, and David Hanlon, as well as myself, all have hearing difficulties and belong to the committee. So come join us at the fall conference and convention. Aside from our regularly scheduled meeting at 4:30 p.m. Saturday afternoon, we hope to make a presentation during a general session. Page 33. Is Your Balance Holding You Back? By Deborah Armstrong. I work for 112-acre community college. As a guide dog handler of 30 years, I was used to confidently zipping off to meetings and negotiating the ongoing campus construction with relative ease. As the resident geek for disability services, I often had to drop what I was doing and hustle off to a lab 20 minutes away to figure out why a student's midterm wouldn't print. As a 50-something, I didn't pay much attention to studies proving we lose our sense of balance as we age. Then, one Sunday, while washing my bathroom floor, I slipped in a wet puddle. Suddenly, I was in extreme pain, unable to stand. It took months to heal, though luckily I did not need surgery. Because I worked with computers, I could continue to do most of my job. Page 34. My guide dog quickly learned to serve as a furry grab bar, enabling us to visit even the least accessible bathrooms. Our transportation for students who depend on crutches or wheelchairs helped me get to my meetings, and though my independence was somewhat diminished, I assumed I'd be back to my old fit self in a few months. But even after I could walk well again, I developed a terrible fear of falling. Though perhaps common for seniors losing their vision, I had been a confident blind traveler since high school. Medical professionals suggested it was a psychological thing. I had, after all, experienced a bad fall, even if only in my own bathroom. Using a knee brace because my leg was now weaker was a suggestion I was reluctant to follow. I've never been prone to big psychological issues before. I wondered if I was getting menopausal or there was a deeper cause. I requested tests and to see a physical therapist. It turned out I was right. It wasn't all in my head. The physical therapist saw immediately that my sense of balance was compromised and my left leg's muscles were weak. The medical test showed I had a vitamin D deficiency because while recovering, I'd spent less time walking around in the sun. A lack of vitamin D compromises our sense of balance. Page 35. Vitamin pills quickly fix the deficiency and simple physical therapy moved me forward on the road to better balance. But internet research showed me some scary trends. Falls are the number one cause of injury for seniors, and millions of seniors with unimpaired vision experience serious injuries caused by falling every year. The problem is that their sense of balance has declined. The sense of balance, I also read, was dependent on vision. Even physical therapists use visual clues to assist clients with relearning balance. I tried, for example, to take a fall prevention for senior class at our local HMO, and they refused me because they insisted that good balance required vision. I encountered this strong prejudice everywhere I turned for help. It would have been easy at that point to simply get a knee brace and permanently ride the campus shuttle for the physically limited. How could I prove to the professionals that I believed I could regain my balance again? Despite the danger of falls, there is little advice for the senior who wants to prevent them. They can remove slippery scatter rugs and take Tai Chi, but by far the most common piece of advice is to improve lighting in the home. Nobody with severe vision loss wants to have good lighting as the only insurance policy to prevent falling. Page 36. I decided I needed to banish my fear of falling before I could zip around campus safely again. Luckily, we have a program to teach students how to become personal trainers. I asked CJ, the trainer, if I could become her guinea pig. CJ was delighted. She is an open-minded teacher with advanced certifications in many aspects of exercise science. Personal trainers find athletes easy to work with, but it's hard to get experience with people who are older, stiffer, or kinesthetically challenged. CJ taught me a mixture of exercises I could do at home and in the gym. Under her careful tutelage, student trainers worked with me They learned how to coach someone who is blind, overweight, creaky, and injured, and such experience will broaden their resumes. I was able to benefit from the variety of these young people's teaching styles. Some of my helpers were the students with learning differences I serve in my job. They love being able to assist me in return. And until the recent budget cuts, I was paying absolutely nothing for this amazing service. The coolest piece of gym equipment I recommend for balance is the BOSU, B-O-S-U, whose website is BOSU.com. This is a springy rubber ball with a flat side that sits on the ground. The exerciser stands on the ball and balances while bending, stretching, or lifting weights. The first time I was introduced to the BOSU, I burst into tears. I couldn't imagine myself balancing on it while even holding on to the wall. At first, we practiced just that. I'd stand holding firmly to a nearby wall. Page 37. Eventually, I could stand just touching the wall with a single finger. Then I had to make it harder by bouncing up and down, flinging my arms into the air and from side to side. I also practiced stepping on and off it and even doing slight knee bends. Due to my injury, it is dangerous for me to do deep squats or some of the other routines athletes practice with the BOSU. But stepping on and off simulated stepping down from a high train platform and bouncing up and down helped me strengthen the leg muscles that keep my knees safe. Flinging my arms around throws off balance, stimulating what might happen if I stumble on an unexpected curb. I eventually graduated to a larger BOSU, which stands at the height of my thighs. In mastering the BOSU, I discovered athletes and even their coaches were terrified to try it with their eyes closed. Today, CJ, who also coaches the cheerleaders, requires they do some simple BOSU work blindfolded. Some of my students have been inspired to work harder at overcoming their dyslexia after seeing me struggle with and master balance on the BOSU. Page 38. I work out at the gym twice a week now and always do a stint on the BOSU. Even though I've tripped on many pieces of broken concrete and those evil cement blocks in parking lots, I have lost the fear of falling. My balance is undoubtedly much better than it was before I had my fall. I also suspect, after talking to many older students who both do and do not have vision issues, that a lack of confidence might be directly related to a lack of balance. If you are afraid to ride an unfamiliar bus or visit a store across town, consider that maybe compromised balance is your body's wisdom. Your body might be telling you that you aren't safe. CJ and I offer this advice for blind people improving balance. Start simply at home first. Use duct tape to hold two old phone books together so it makes a solid cube. Add more phone books as you advance, but be sure to create a secure platform. You want it to be a bit springy, but not slippery. Practice stepping on and off your phone book edifice in a clear, carpeted area. Or if you feel unsure, near a strong, heavy table you can hold on to while stepping. Step in different patterns, on, off, sideways, backwards. Move slowly, breathe deeply, and pretend that a string runs from the top of your head to your toes. Practice every day, but don't push yourself beyond your own comfort zone. Page 39. Sit in a chair, feet flat on the floor, knees slightly bent. Your feet should be in the position you normally assume when standing. Place your hands in front of you in a way that seems comfortable but positioned so you cannot use your arms to assist you when standing. I like to hold my palms together, touching my chin with my fingertips. This presses my elbows close to my sides, preventing them from assisting me to stand. Now stand up slowly, using only the strength in your legs. Once you are upright, lower yourself to the chair, again not using your hands to assist. Just as your rear touches the chair, but before you settle your weight onto it, stand again slowly. My physical therapist made me repeat this 25 times nonstop every morning. It gave me amazingly strong legs. Of course, if you have any concerns that your legs aren't healthy, you should check with the doctor first before performing this or any other exercise. Stand near a solid chair or counter and holding on to it with one hand, balance for as long as you can on one foot. Track your progress by counting 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, and so on. Log how many Mississippis you can go standing on the single foot. You will see improvement each week. Remember to do this with each foot. Page 40, investigate local fitness centers, YMCA, senior centers, and college gyms. If you are on fixed income, get creative and ask about scholarships, or if you can be part of an experiment, or as I did, other people's training. If an exercise class looks challenging or inaccessible, don't give up but try something else. I unsuccessfully tried several exercise classes before I found CJ. Don't let injuries, age, arthritis, or your weight be a barrier. Not every exercise opportunity works for morbidly obese or arthritic people, but many exercises need to simply be done more slowly and gently. Make sure the instructor or trainer has experience working with people who have your physical limitations. You can show them how to work with your visual impairment, but they need to be trained properly to deal with physical disabilities or medical conditions. Instructors should not push a client into doing workouts that aren't safe. Remember to do a variety of exercises and not just focus on balance. We need stretching for flexibility, aerobics for cardiovascular health, and the often neglected strength training to keep the muscles supporting our joints strong. I use a treadmill at home to keep up with aerobics. I also use free weights at home to improve my strength and keep osteoporosis at bay. When I travel, I use exercise bands. In the gym, I work out on machines and use the time to learn new floor exercises I can do at home. I always ask students to teach me new stretches. Don't let little issues prevent you from keeping yourself healthy. I love to swim but can't fit it into my schedule. I am ashamed I cannot walk around the gym independently, but right now I always have a student guiding me because there are too many people and obstacles to navigate. More important, I can independently walk everywhere on campus again. Neither of these little annoyances have prevented me from getting what I need to keep my health and balance strong. Page 41, Spring 2011 Awards by Roger Peterson and Bernice Kandarian. At our Spring 2011 convention banquet, the CCB Awards Committee presented 3 awards and the Publications Committee gave the usual 2. The Awards Committee conferred 2 humanitarian awards and 1 community service award. A humanitarian award went to R.C. Upham, a longtime volunteer who assists blind people to participate in recreational pursuits. A plaque, smoked glass 8x10, silver underplate, and silver lettering on black plate, landscape mode, California Council of the Blind Humanitarian Award to Robert C. R.C. Upham for his volunteer service as teacher, coach, mentor, guide, driver, philosopher, and door opener for people who are blind or visually impaired to recreational pursuits such as skiing, canoeing, and camping, dedicating countless hours to such organizations as Sierra Regional Ski for Light and Enchanted Hills Camp, presented this 14th day of May, 2011, in the city of Sacramento, California. Page 42, the other humanitarian award honored Dr. Stuart Wittenstein, superintendent of the California School for the Blind. Plaque, smoked glass, 8x10, silver underplate and silver lettering on black plate, landscape mode. California Council of the Blind Humanitarian Award to Dr. Stuart Wittenstein, who, as superintendent of the California School for the Blind in Fremont, has been a staunch advocate for the education of children and youth who are blind and visually impaired, for the use and teaching of Braille, and for the opportunity for the students to engage in real-world work experience in preparation for real-world careers. He is also a nationally renowned leader in the movement to preserve the specialized school as a part of the continuum of educational services available to children and youth who are blind and visually impaired. Presented this 14th day of May 2011 in the city of Sacramento, California. Page 43, our CCB Community Service Award was presented to a surprised and moved Dawn Wilcox, whose life exemplifies integration into and service to the community. Plaque, black glass 8x10 gold underplate and gold lettering on black plate, landscape mode, California Council of the Blind Community Service Award to Dawn Wilcox, RN, BSN, who has made use of her professional competence and pride as a nurse to educate the blindness community about health and the health community about blindness and visual impairment. She is a leader in her local chapter, the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, as well as the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, and coordinator of the Health Library at the Vista Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Palo Alto. And she bills herself as Ye Olde Clarinetist on summer Sundays in the park in Los Altos in Ye Olde Town Band. Presented this 14th day of May 2011 in the city of Sacramento, California. The winner of the Issue-Oriented Article Award by vote of the members of the Publications Committee was our former editor, Winifred Downing, for her article, Today's Blind Child in School, BC Fall 2010, expressing her profound concern about the plight of the blind child in today's public schools. When she thanked the committee chair for the award, she said that what she really wants is for CCB to do something about the situation. Page 44. Dave McElroy won the Lifestyle Article Award for his article, Traveling Abroad, It's Easier Than You Think, BC Spring 2010, about how easy and pleasurable international travel can be for a blind person. The committee also wishes to give honorable mention to a very close second. One of our students, Tuan Nguyen, wrote a very fine article recounting his first ACB convention. Keep writing, Tuan. You have great potential. In closing, both committees would like to express our concern about the dearth of participation of the membership in this process. The awards committee would like to receive more awards nominations, and the publications committee wishes that the membership would submit more articles for the Blind Californian. Please be in touch with the committee chairs if you have a question about how to participate. Page 45, Summary of Spring 2011 Resolutions by Frank Welty. At each of our conventions, the CCB Resolutions Committee puts in long hours preparing resolutions for consideration by the assembled membership. Resolutions are the means by which we set the policies of our organization, so the importance of the committee's work cannot be overstated. Jeff Tom, committee chair, did a wonderful job chairing the committee meetings and reading the resolutions on Sunday morning. Committee members Gabe Griffith, Jean Lozano, Charles Nabarit, Dirk Neihardt, Linda Perel, and Robert Wendt each made significant contributions to the drafting of the resolutions. Frank Welty also assisted the committee. We appreciated the willingness of the authors of the resolutions to provide their input during the editing process. During the spring convention, the committee considered 14 resolutions. 3 were withdrawn, and the remaining 11 were adopted. Resolution 2011-A1 urged the California Emergency Management Agency, the CALEMA, acronym CALEMA, to audit local emergency preparedness agencies to determine the degree to which local disaster preparedness plans are meeting the needs of persons with visual impairments, and it also urged CALEMA to develop training for local emergency preparedness agencies on meeting the needs of persons with visual impairments. Page 46. Resolution 2011-A2 urged the Department of Rehabilitation and the Department of General Services in adopting any modifications to the procurement system for purchase of computer products for department clients and state employees with visual impairments to ensure that these individuals are able to obtain fully functioning computer systems that meet their individualized needs with appropriate training in a timely manner. Resolution 2011-A3 called on CCB to support SB 543, which would extend the sunset of the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind from 2012 to 2014. Resolution 2011-A4 called on CCB to oppose AB 727, which would require the percentage of nutritious content in vending machines located on state property to increase from 35% to 50% by 2014 and to 100% by 2016. Resolution 2011-A5 called for the continued sale of incandescent light bulbs while manufacturers work on producing a light source that uses less electricity while retaining the same light characteristics as incandescent light bulbs. It further directed CCB to support federal legislation directed to this end. Page 47, Resolution 2011-A6 dealt with the Department of Rehabilitation policy of funding the first 2 years of a client's post-secondary education at the community college rate, regardless of the college attended by the client. It was withdrawn by the author, and it was referred to the Rehabilitation Services Committee. Resolution 2011-A7 directed CCB to call upon local governments to use accessible voting equipment during local elections. It also directed CCB to pursue a strategy to require local governments to use accessible voting equipment during such elections. Resolution 2011-A8 directed CCB to support efforts to ensure that there be no additional state funding reductions that jeopardize levels of service in areas impacting Californians who are blind or visually impaired. Resolution 2011-A9 directed CCB to support multiple options for accessible absentee balloting, including accessible web-based technologies and telephonic voting systems. Resolution 2011-A10 directed CCB to call upon the State Department of Education and the Department of General Services to ensure that high-quality textbooks will continue to be produced in a timely manner for elementary school students using large print or braille. Resolution 2011-A11 dealt with the Business Enterprise Program's collection of vending machine revenues at certain United States Postal Service vending facilities. It was withdrawn by the author. Resolution 2011-A12 dealt with accessibility problems of the Safeway.com website. This resolution was withdrawn and referred to the Technology Committee. Resolutions 2011-A13 and 2011-A14 were the appreciation resolutions to the convention volunteers and hotel staff, respectively. Page 48, Report on State and Federal Legislation by Frank Welty. On May 12, about 30 CCB members gathered at the California State Capitol to take part in our 2011 Capitol Day. After a legislative briefing, members of our group visited the offices of state legislators to explain our positions on several issues of importance to blind Californians. We also enjoyed a picnic lunch in the park adjacent to the Capitol. We thank the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California for providing our lunch again this year, and we also thank Silicon Valley Council of the Blind and Mr. Art Takahara for covering the cost of a charter bus for this event. Page 49, State Legislation. As I write this article, Governor Brown and the state legislature are continuing to struggle to close an estimated $25 billion state budget deficit. The budget cuts agreed to earlier this year were enough to cut the deficit nearly in half, and an unexpected rise in state revenues this year will cover some of the deficit as well. However, in order to close the remainder of the budget gap, legislators may consider additional social service cuts. We need to continue contacting our members of the Assembly and Senate and urge them to preserve vital services to people with disabilities. CCB-sponsored bills. Our regulations bill, AB 410, by Assemblyman Sondre Swanson, has passed through the Assembly Committee on Business, Professions, and Consumer Protection, and also the Assembly Committee on Appropriations. By the time you read this, the bill will have been taken up by the full Assembly. AB 410 will require state agencies, upon request, to provide screen reader-friendly versions of regulatory text in notices of proposed regulations. In order to control state costs, the scope of the bill has been restricted to regulations adopted by the Department of Rehabilitation. Regulations that must be submitted to the California Building Standards Commission that pertain to disability access compliance, regulations adopted by the State Department of Education that pertain to special education, and regulations that pertain to the Medi-Cal program. In the future, we plan to work to extend this new practice to more state agencies. Page 50. Another CCB-sponsored bill, AB 390, by Assembly Member Anthony Portantino, will place a requirement in the statute to ensure that the Department of Motor Vehicles will continue its recently implemented practice of sending renewal notices to holders of California state ID cards. AB 390 has passed through the Assembly and is working its way through the state Senate. Other state legislation, AB 727, by Assemblywoman Holly Mitchell, would require food services being operated on state property to provide food that conforms to federal nutrition guidelines and would require the Department of General Services to encourage the purchase of this food from local growers. The bill would also require vending machines located on state property to increase their percentage of nutritious food items from 35 to 50% by 2014 and to 100% by 2016. By the time you read this column, AB 727 will have been considered by the full Assembly. CCB and Randolph Shepherd vendors of California will continue to oppose this bill unless the vending machine content requirements are adjusted so as not to harm the livelihood of licensed blind vendors. Please express your concerns about these bills to your member of the State Assembly and Senate. Page 51, Federal Legislation. You will recall that CCB has relied on vehicle donations for a significant portion of its funding in recent years. In 2004, some unfavorable federal tax rules took effect, and since then, revenues from car donations have been greatly diminished. The U.S. House of Representatives is considering a bill, H.R. 860, which would bring balance back to the way the IRS treats vehicle donations, so that CCB and other nonprofits will receive the amounts of donations that will allow them to greatly expand their vital services. H.R. 860 has 61 co-sponsors, including 7 Californians, Jim Costa, Sam Farr, Barb Filner, Barbara Lee, Grace Napolitano, Pete Stark, and Lynn Woolsey. The Senate bill is S-110. Please ask your member of the House of Representatives to co-sponsor H.R. 860 and ask Senators Boxer and Feinstein to co-sponsor S-110. Finally, I wish to thank all the members of CCB who have shared with me in the advocacy work of this organization and given me so many words of encouragement in the past 2 years. It has been a time of learning and professional growth for me, and it has been a privilege to serve CCB. While I have chosen to pursue other professional opportunities, I will still be actively engaged in advocacy and in the other activities of this organization. Page 52. Please direct inquiries about CCB's legislative advocacy activities to Jeff Tom, Governmental Affairs Committee Chair at 916-995-3967 or at jsthom@comcast.net. You can get detailed information about all of ACB's legislative activities by reading legislative reports, which will be posted regularly on the website and distributed on our various email lists. You can listen to the reports by calling the CCB's toll-free phone number, 800-221-6359 on evenings and weekends. Check with the California Connection to find out when the next legislative report will be updated. For federal legislative information, please check with the Washington Connection at 800-424-8666 or on the ACB website at acb.org. Page 53, CCB Officers and Directors, 2011. Editor's note, we're indebted to Bernice Kandarian, who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and board members, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term, and the year next up for election. Terms actually begin on January 1 following election. We shall publish the list this way, at least in issues just preceding and following elections, and routinely if members wish. The presence of an asterisk, or star, means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. President Donna Pomerantz, 10-12, first term, Pasadena, California, 91106, 626-844-4388, home, donna.pomerantz at ccbnet.org. First Vice President Eugene Lozano Jr., star 10-12, second term, Sacramento, California, 95841, eugene.lozano at ccbnet.org. Second Vice President Roger Peterson, star 10-11, partial term, Mountain View, California, 94040, phone 650-969-1688, home, roger.peterson at ccbnet.org. Secretary Gabe Griffith, star 09-11, second term, Concord, California, 94521, at 916-505-8780, gabe.griffith at ccbnet.org. Page 54, Treasurer Peter Pardini, 10-12, first term, Mill Valley, California, 94941, 415-990-9202, cell, peter.pardini at ccbnet.org. Immediate past president, Jeff Tom, 11-2? Sacramento, California, 95831, 916-995-3967, cell, jeff.thom at ccbnet.org. Board of Directors, Jerry Arakawa, 09-11, fourth term, Culver City, California, 90230, jerry.arakawa at ccbnet.org. Lena Bandy, star 10-12, first term, Monrovia, California, 91016, 818-987-4325, cell, leena.bandy at ccbnet.org. Ardis Bazin, star 10-11, partial term, Burbank, California, 91504, ardis.bazyn at ccbnet.org. Foster Brown, 09-11, first term, San Francisco, California, 94127, 951-907-5872, cell, foster.brown at ccbnet.org. Vincent Calderon, star 10-12, second term, Pasadena, California, 91106, 626-429-4539, cell, vince.calderon at ccbnet.org. David Hanlon, 10-12, first term, San Diego, California, 92117, 858-610-0825, cell, DAVE.HANLON at ccbnet.org. David Jackson, 10-12, third term, San Francisco, California, 94127, 415-239-1873. davidjackson@ccbnet.org. Dan Kaiser, 09-11, first term, Sacramento, California, 95814, 916-444-7753, home, dan.kysor@ccbnet.org. Linda Porrell, 09-11, first term, San Francisco, California, 94112, 415-577-8437, cell, linda.porrelle@ccbnet.org. Page 55, Publications Committee. Bernice Kandarian, Chair, Mountain View, California, 94040, 650-969-3155, bernice.kandarian@ccbnet.org. Judy Wilkinson, Editor, San Leandro, California, 94577-510-357-1844, home, editor@ccbnet.org. Winifred Downing, San Francisco, California, 94122, winifred.downing@ccbnet.org. Evelyn Drury, Ramona, California, 92065, evelyn.drewry@ccbnet.org. Roger Peterson, Mountain View, California, 94040, 650-969-1688, roger.peterson@ccbnet.org. Bonnie Rennie, Santa Ana, California, 92705, bonnie.rennie@ccbnet.org. Donna Sanchez, San Jose, California, 95128, donna.sanchez@ccbnet.org. Peter Schellen, San Luis Obispo, California, 93401, peterschellin@ccbnet.org. Catherine Schmidt Whitaker, Diamond Bar, California, 91765, catherine.schmidt@ccbnet.org. Susan Schulter, Saratoga, California, 95070, susan.schulter@ccbnet.org. Lynn Laird, Large Print Layout, Berkeley, California, 94705, linne.laird@ccbnet.org. Technical Operations Group, webmaster@ccbnet.org, Greg Fowler, John Glass, Jeremiah Johansson, Phil Obregon, Facebook and Twitter, Tom Randall.